Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenyon Knapp. Well, welcome everyone to the Mental Healthy Podcast. I'm glad to have you with us here today. I've got a neat friend here on the podcast, Eric Troyer, who is the clinical director of Valeo. And we're going to get to Valeo in a second, but Eric, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad to have you here today.
Thanks for having me, Kenyon. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Well, you know, our listeners are, of course, a lot of graduate students and professors and people in the mental health fields across the country. And so that's who we're talking to today. And I know that they're probably interested not just in the whole topic we're going to get into today, but knowing you and your background, because, you know, I bring in, you know, experts like you from all different fields around the country and really around the world. And so could you maybe give the listeners a little bit of background on yourself and experiences you've had, maybe some educational things, things like that?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so like you said, I serve as the clinical director right now. And so obviously within that realm of people care, counseling, but I didn't start there in regard to my involvement in missions. And so my story is even back to high school, felt like that's where God was calling me. And of course, at that time, had no idea where, what, or how. But early 20s, went overseas, and my wife and I were in church planting at the time. So, I mean, I didn't even do any psychology courses in undergrad. Like, it wasn't my thing, wasn't on my radar. I was just in church planting and enjoyed that for a good number of years. And I guess the short story is I started doing some discipling and mentoring of national church partners down the road. And I don't know. All I can say is at that time, something lit up inside of me. Like, this is how I'm wired, you know, to walk with people, to journey with them. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I was, goodness, late 20s by that time. And I just felt like, I have no idea what I'm doing, basically. You know, I felt like this is where I'm supposed to be. And that's what led me into getting, you know, my master's in counseling and then training and experience and moving into this realm that I find myself now. So it was really through the avenue of being in missions that I found this calling, if you will, or just niche of how I'm wired and where I'm supposed to be. So, yeah.
Well, that's cool. You know, when I hear you talk, you remind me of that movie Chariots of Fire when Eric Liddell said, "When I run, I feel his pleasure." And that was one of the great lines of that movie. And when I hear you talk about missions work and mentoring and discipling people, I sort of start to hear your heart come out a little bit of, you know, really feeling God's pleasure when you do those things.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. You know, I still have, obviously, I'm in the realm of people care specifically for missionaries, and we'll get to that. But so it's still a high value and a high purpose in my life to be involved in global missions. But, you know, I always joke with my church planning buddies, like, I knew something was wrong whenever we had discussions about church planning. I just started to go to sleep inside. And yet when I had discussions about, you know, how to walk with people and understand people's journeys, like something just came alive. So it was definitely that sense of, yeah, this is how I am to invest my life for the kingdom's sake here. And so yeah, it was maybe not quite movie worthy like Chariots of Fire, but the same feeling. Yeah, good analogy there.
Absolutely. Well, I mentioned briefly when I started to introduce you, you work with Valeo. You're the clinical director there, and you mentioned missionaries. So people are starting to connect the dots. This is something with missionaries and all. Could you tell everyone what is Valeo and what do they do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to maybe boil down just a little bit that word missionary, because I think sometimes, and you know, no discredit to anybody who uses it in a different way, but in this context of this conversation, we're going to be talking about those who go cross-culturally, typically overseas, to a distant land and proclaim the gospel in whatever form or fashion that they're doing that. It could be helps, could be medical, could be church planning, could be teaching, whatever. But it's those who are going out. And so So Valeo specifically focuses on those that are in that capacity. And so different from, you know, those that are in their country of origin or their passport country, and different from those who are maybe believers but and live overseas, but they're working, you know, maybe in oil or, you know, government or some other capacity overseas. We don't serve them either. So mm-hmm. we're serving only those who are in full-time Christian missionary service. And yeah, so the way that we do that, I won't give you the whole history, but we've got a history that runs back, goodness, probably close to 30 years now mm-hmm. of serving that community. And we've done a lot of different things over the years, from third culture kid, you know, missionary kid retreats. We've done local counseling. We've done travels. We've done resourcing for cars and doctor's appointments. Like, I mean, it's just a myriad of different things. But as Valeo stands right now, I think we can best be equated to telemental health while people are on the field. So, and we might touch on this a little bit later, but there's some really good organizations out there that do a spectacular job of caring for people in different ways, you know, intensives or retreats or whatnot. But usually it requires them going, so like leaving their place of service and going. But where Valeo comes in is we're able to meet with them in their living room. And so, you know, we don't travel there, but I would say probably, I don't know, 95% of what we do is in the telemental health setting. So that's the kind of the scalable version of what Valeo is all about. Is we have a team of counselors and psychiatrists who provide that clinical and, you know, as appropriate in some levels, pastoral care to people while they're currently serving overseas. So we're able to do that with limited capacity when they're back in their home country, but most of it's when they're on site.
And what a blessing that is, because I'm just thinking, you know, historically over the decades and centuries, you know, people would be all around the world serving the Lord, and the kind of support that you can provide to them just wasn't even a possibility in the past. And now right. through all this telemental health stuff and video conferencing like we're doing right now, you're able to provide so much knowledge and connection and support, and it's really wonderful, you know?
Yeah, it is. And we started this journey. So, I mean, a lot of times people say, did you start because of COVID? Well, no, not really. We started kind of headlong into this telemental health scene in, I think, late 2016. So it preceded COVID by a few years. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we got into it is the organization was in a time of renewal, I guess you could say, that we had some new blood coming in, and we really wanted to recraft the organization and pare down our efforts and really hone in and focus on what was going to be the most impactful and helpful realm of care for the missionary community. And so we did this large survey amongst the missions community, sending organizations, sending churches, and basically asked that question. If an organization could be created or recrafted to best meet the current needs, what would that current need be? And overwhelmingly, it came back, we need clinical counseling, we need it on the field. And so that was our marching order. Now the question, if, you know, for a small organization is, how in the world do you do that? We're not traveling all the time, all around the world. And so that's where we started venturing into this realm of video care. And it has, I think at that time, I mean, obviously it's a bit more normal for everybody now. A lot of therapists have kind of dipped their toes into that and have gotten comfortable with it. But at that time, I think us as a group of therapists were thinking, what are we going to miss? How's it going to be different from in person? And mm-hmm. So there was not on our client side, but on our side, there was more hesitations to get into it. But I'm telling you, probably 4, 5, 6 months. Like, it was a short amount of time that we thought, wow, this is effective. We are reaching way more people, and there's hardly any difference in therapeutic bond, therapeutic connection, and value. And so, anyways, and then we just kind of jumped into it starting 2017, and it's been amazing to see how God's leveraged that risk on our side and just used it in amazing ways for this population.
Well, that's awesome. And for the sake of full disclosure and transparency to the listeners, I should say that I've been so impressed by your ministry and all that you're doing. I'm looking forward to joining your team in a very part-time mm-hmm. capacity in the near yeah. future. So I'm looking forward to that, just to be, you know,
we're looking forward to it.
Transparent.
And I think
yeah.
it's going to be a blessing to this community.
Well, I hope so, because I have the same heart towards this group that you do. And I'll share briefly, not to monopolize in any way, because you're the guest. my middle and first name are after my two uncles, and one of my uncles was a missionary in Africa for about 50 years. And so all growing up, he was my Christian hero, and I always wanted to sort of emulate him in some way. And so serving with you guys, it feels like it's a connection to my childhood and who I was named after. So I so respect what you guys do. But let me jump into a question or two I have for you about the ministry and what you do. There's a lot of terminology and jargon within this field, and there is in every field, you know, psychologists, counselors, social workers, they've all got their own little jargon. But I notice you sort of use terms like missionary, and you use terms like global workers and different terms like that. How do you mean it differently when you say missionary versus global worker, or why do you use those terms?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so the short answer is our population work in very different places. So they work in open countries, what we would call a country that is warm and welcoming to missionary activity. And so we call those open countries. And then those countries that are not so open and warm to missionaries being there for that purpose, we would call closed or creative access countries. And for the sake of that segment of our population, which is a pretty significant portion, we use a term other than missionary, because missionary has a potent connotation mm-hmm. in those countries' minds. And so we use a more generic term, global worker. Now, I mean, to our ears, that could be a diplomat, that could be, you know, a mm-hmm. service member on contract or something like that. But what we mean is, actually, you won't find this on our website. So if you go to Vallejo's website, it's pretty washed and clean, because we want to make it a safe place to go visit and interact with for those living in those restricted access countries. And so we have global worker everywhere on there, but actually in our mission statement, it's global worker for Christ. So we know what that means, but it's mm-hmm. it's somebody living globally for the purposes of expanding the kingdom of God.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And that makes sense. You know, we need to protect people who are in, you know, difficult situations. And I mean, just like we ourselves would like to be protected in the various roles that we might serve in. So
absolutely.
Now, when you talk about doing telemental health, like I know a lot of our listeners do some telemental health work here and there here in America, but you're dealing cross-culturally and you deal with people from all around the world. So my mind just gets blown when I think about, you know, all the possibilities of stuff that you run into. So I guess what are some of the distinctive issues that you run into with this population of global workers?
Yeah, I think in one sense, missionaries are just normal people, right? And mm-hmm. so they have all of our normal people problems, depression, anxiety, parenting, marriage. I mean, just everything mm-hmm. that you would see if they were coming in your office here locally. I would say for this population, you have all of those normals, but then you've got some extra normals or kind of extraordinary circumstances. And some of those are environmental. Some of those are cultural. Some of those are the layers of what I call termite stress that are just there all the time in their environment. And so, so I would say you've got this population. Number one, I will say they are, in my opinion, the best population to work with. I mean, usually highly intelligent, committed, passionate, driven, even when they're really broken or really in disarray, they have this core about them that they want to be well, they want to be whole and healthy. And so there's just this internal orientation towards being healthy in all realms. So they are a wonderful population to work with. But they live in places that are extraordinarily difficult. And some are obviously are in places that are, you know, just much more difficult on a day in and day out basis. And so, yeah, so I would say, you know, particularly for this population, it's dealing with some of the realities about where they're living. And, you know, they also don't have any of the support that they would naturally have in their home country. They don't have, you know, things that we just take for granted, like a sweet church service on Sunday to get refreshed, or they don't have a Christian radio station to kind of be pouring in truth as they drive somewhere. They don't have a group of Christian friends that they're getting together and, you know, just doing life with on a regular basis. So, I mean, there's just these kind of supports that we have. And honestly, we take for granted sometimes, but when you're in that context, you realize, whoa, okay, I need so much more than what I have. And yet I don't have it available to me right now. So, anyway, so that's some of the reality, I think, for that population. There's some other things. I would say transition is always a big part of a missionary's life. In Western societies, we do tend to say that we live in transient cultures, but I mean, it's nothing compared to a missionary who either they themselves or those that they're connected with in their community, we call it the revolving door reality, that there's this constant cycle of coming in and coming out and getting bonded and then, you know, moving to a different location. And that's hard. I mean, that's really, really hard on the heart and on relationships. And so I think that's, part of the reality for a missionary's life.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it reminds me, I was talking to a general, actually the president here at Liberty recently, Don DeCostin, and he was talking about what it's like being a soldier, and he was a soldier for 32 years all around the world. And one of the things he said is that, you know, you're isolated in other parts of the world. You might have your small group of soldiers or whatever with you, but you're in another part of the world. And he said what was hard for him is that he missed a lot of things. Like there was, you know, there was funerals, there was weddings, there was somebody had a baby that was a friend, old friend. And like you just sort of miss out on a lot of life per se back here in the States because you're over somewhere. And
yes, absolutely.
And so that sounds similar, like a military lifestyle is an analogy maybe to what the missionaries deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a lot of friends who are in the military. We live in a city that has a lot of military here, and it's been very interesting to talk about the correlations of that. I think there's some correlations. I think there's actually some heightened level of burden and stressors that missionaries face that those in the military don't, because, you know, when you deploy or when you get reassigned to a foreign station in the military, typically the military is taking care of all those details for you, you know, and, you know, for a missionary, my goodness. I mean, all those details are on you. I mean, every bit of logistics, you know, you hit ground and you're trying to negotiate a housing contract in a language that you don't understand. And you know, you don't speak the language and, oh my God. Yeah. So it's pretty burdensome in terms of what is on their shoulders. They have to be a jack of all trades. And, you know, most of us aren't jacks of all trades. So it's really difficult, but absolutely. Yeah. There's definitely some correlation there. And the whole, you know, especially, I would say aging parents and kids when they go off to college, that season for a family's life, is particularly difficult for missionary families. Cause man, talk about your heart being pulled in two different locations, and, you know, with limited budgets, it's not like you're traveling back all the time to build those bridges. And so it's, those are hard realities for sure.
Okay, so I'm hearing so far you got family separation issues, you know, not being able possibly to support parents who are they get older. If you're in that sandwich generation, you've got, you know, isolation they experience, lots of transitions that they're going through all the time. So how do all those dynamics affect people on a psychological level? Like what are the clinical issues and typical care needs per se? Like, what are they? Like, what are the more common issues that you see in missionaries because of those dynamics?
Yeah, great question. I would say one of the kind of hidden realities to missions life is that, you know, in a Western context, usually a husband and a wife, they will have their own independent ventures. You know, I go to work and I go to my work, or I stay at home or whatnot. And then you come back in the evening time and you do family life.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a handful of hours to, you know, really focus on that. And then the next day is the, you know, kind of the groundhog day, right? You kind of do the same thing and you come back.
Yep.
And what people don't always realize is that in missions, there is a lot more overlap in terms of focus and time. And so that's one of the things that we see regularly, is not just how do I love my family well and how do I do family life well, but sometimes it's how do I do collegial life well with my family? And, you know, how are we now business partners, if you will, in this ministry? And maybe they weren't experienced in that, you know, and didn't have the skill set to navigate that well. And so I would say, you know, to answer your question, domestic life is one of the areas where they need to kind of recalibrate and kind of refocus on how are we going to do this new life that we find. I would say a second thing is just coming to grasp with limitations and helping them wrestle through some of those feelings of defeat and frustration. You know, we're talking about a population. I mean, who in their right mind uproots themselves, uproots their family, and takes on a job where normally you're raising money to do this? So the pay is not good, the environment's difficult, the task that you have before you is way larger than you can, you know, shake a stick at and conceptualize. Who does that? Well, who does that is highly driven, highly passionate people. And usually they come from context where they were pretty successful, you know, and I've done well in life and I've did well in school and I've done well in this ministry and now I'm going overseas. And then boom, they hit that wall of reality of now I don't speak the language. I'm effectively a 2-year-old again. Mm-hmm. I have no competencies here yet. I feel like I've maybe missed my calling. Like, what is going on? And so it sends them into a tailspin sometimes of feeling like, I don't know if this is the right place for me. And, you know, part of our job, especially I'm talking maybe more on that first term, those first few years side of life over there, is just the normalization of that experience so that people don't see themselves as failing at the job, but just understanding that this is part of the learning curve and it's huge and it's much bigger than you presumed it would be. And, you know, your deficits or your weaknesses, they're okay. Let's understand them. Let's work on the things that we can work on. And, you know, let's move forward in areas that you are able to move in. Let's celebrate small successes. You know, so some of it is not a, well, let me just say this. We do a lot of clinical work. We're a clinical outfit and we've got excellent clinicians that are part of us. I would say a good bit of what we do is more pastoral, more encouraging, more framework orienting, more mindset shifting, as opposed to, you know, dealing with a particular diagnosis, you know, especially in that first segment of transition for the first few years. Yeah. So anyways, that's one of the areas that we see is kind of that transitionary phase and helping them through that.
Well, that's good. I've been asking a lot of questions so far about, you know, what are the difficulties they have and all this, but you and the other folks at Vallejo have been at this for a while. So what are some of the resources you have? Like when a person comes to you and they're having a hard transition or just a lot of stress from what they're doing, what are some of the care resources your ministry can bring to them?
Yeah, so our mandate as an organization is to be involved in both preventative as well as restorative care. And I would say over the years, we have learned that while people talk about preventative care and the importance of preventative care, we have found it difficult to have people buy in on a regular basis in that preventative care realm.
Sure.
So, for example, one of the things that we've created as an organization is what we call the field guide. And basically, it's a workbook, if you will, that goes through our four outcomes, and those are aligning, equipping, healing, and struggling well. So they're just different domains that we feel like are inclusive of pretty much the main aspects of a missionary's life. And so it kind of walks them through, and then people can blaze through it in a month or so, or they can just take a long time, like months, to work through it. But it's one of those resources that we give to people to do some of that care in the background. Of course, then we, if they work on that field guide and they want further care, or it identifies some things that they need to focus on, then they can meet with one of our counselors and enter into a therapeutic relationship for that issue. And but the challenge, Kenyon, is they don't have a lot of resources outside of Vallejo for that particular sort of care, for the more clinical walking with you in your daily life sort of care. So we do try and resource outside of Vallejo, and we're in really good relationship with a lot of other member care centers and counseling centers that provide care to missionaries, because we want people to get the care that they need. Sometimes we're the answer for that, and sometimes other people are way better fit for that. So those are a couple of the areas. We also do debriefing as well, which is more of a preventative care service, and that is more on the just unpacking of story, seeing thematically what you've been going through, what God's been teaching you, and areas where you might want to explore further for healing or growth. So yeah, those are some of the areas that we focus on.
Well, that's good. Are those resources that you talked about, like that field guide you mentioned, is that available on your website?
It is, yeah.
Do you want to share with the listeners your website? Because one of my goals today is also to advertise Vallejo and the work you do. So could you tell the listeners about your website?
Yeah, sure. So the website is Vallejo, V-A-L-E-O, Vallejo.global. And then the field guide, I think it's just, I'm pretty sure it's just Vallejo.global/field guide. And then people will be able to download that. And yeah, all the listeners, please download it. Like it's not just for the missionary population. It would be absolutely beneficial for you to go through. I think you would find a great value in walking through that. But yeah, the website, it is more geared towards, it's not hugely informative. Like we're not answering all the Q&As. We really drive our website for the person seeking care. So we want to, not just provide a whole bunch of random content, but we want people to know exactly what we do, how we do it, and how they can access that care. So for those who go to the website, you'll kind of get that feel that it's really created for the missionary themselves to know, is this the right place for me, and do I want to get care here?
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, to you know, most of my listeners are not familiar with member care or, you know, this type of counseling, but I see it as such a neat fit with the gospel and supporting those around the world who are bringing the gospel to the world that this is a perfect fit with everything I do here at Liberty University and really most of the people I work with and most of the listeners of this podcast would probably on some level resonate with what you're talking about. So this is really neat. Now, earlier you mentioned that Vallejo has been into the telemental health side of things before COVID and all that. And, of course, you know, telemental health here in America is really booming as well. since you've been in it, you know, probably a little bit longer than most people listening, what are some mm-hmm. of the advantages or some of the growing areas that telemental health provides to people? Like how can you use telemental health in a more effective way than maybe your average listener might be thinking of?
Yeah, so I think for our population, you know, they really have two different choices. So, mm-hmm. you know, just imagine yourself, you're out in the middle of Nowheresville, yeah. Africa, and really your choice is, do I uproot my family, pause the ministry, pay money that I really don't have, but feel like I need to spend to go to a center and do a week or maybe 2 weeks or even 3 weeks intensive counseling. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, come back to my place of service. And then you've got Valeo, the option where, well, actually every Thursday at 8:30 in my evening after the kids are down, I can talk with a therapist, you know, mm-hmm. And we can have that regular conversation. So yeah, I would say we have found, you know, again, in the therapeutic relationship, it's extremely effective. Now, our population may be just a little bit different than normal general population because they're already so used to doing things on video. They're used to talking with family back home. They're used to doing stuff with teammates who live, you know, a couple hours away from them. And so, you know, it wasn't too big of a jump for them to integrate therapeutic relationship into their world. And so, yeah, we're able to do a lot of different modalities. I mean, all the talk therapy plus EMDR, we're able to do some audio therapies. We're able to integrate a lot of different areas. I would say probably the greater challenges are with younger kids. So, you know, it's very different when you've got a pre-adolescent kid in your office and you've got a whole play therapy or, mm-hmm. you know, a comfortable room for them. We find much higher and longer levels of engagement in person with that population than we do in telemental health. And so so I would say that's one of the limitations of telemental health as we've experienced it. But by and large, we have found that, you can utilize it for pretty much everything that you would do in your private practice. So I don't know if there's any outside of the norm tips and tricks that I would have in terms of how to utilize it. But I would just kind of underscore the fact that it is a highly effective way to provide care. Now, one of the challenges is, just like you and I right here, we're only seeing from chest up. You don't get the whole body posture. You don't get, mm-hmm. you know, how they're, especially when you're working with a couple, like how they're sitting towards one another. You don't get the feel of being in the same room as somebody. And so there's that. There's also the technical side of things. If there is a glitch of any sort, like I've just had it break up at the worst moment's time, you know, I mean, they're getting ready to really enter into something deeply heartfelt. And then I've got to ask them 30 seconds later, can you repeat that? You know, and like, how do you duplicate that? And
yeah,
so there's the technical side of it that's a little bit of a challenge sometimes, but truthfully, I have been quite amazed, especially in recent years, the last four years. We rarely have any sort of technical glitches. And these are people who are living in the most remote locations. Just the availability of strong internet around the world is just phenomenal. And so, and I think the platforms like, the video platforms have just gotten a lot better dealing with lower bandwidth as well. And so anyways, those are some of our realities.
Well, that's great. I mean, yeah, it makes me think of that old cliche, necessity is a mother of invention. And, you know, when you mentioned that, you know, these missionaries have been using technology for a long time, it reminds me of back when I was in college, just a few years ago. I started in 1988 and then I went 88 to 92 for undergrad. And I remember back in 1988, a lot of my missionary kid friends at college were using Prodigy email. And that was even before AOL caught on and some of the other big platforms. Right. I mean, Google and Gmail wasn't even a thing back then. And so it's like the missionary kids. I remember one of my missionary kid friends was like, "Hey, you got to try Prodigy. It's great." And he was like sending, you know, almost instant emails to his family in another part of the world. And so it's neat to see how, you know, hard circumstances, you know, forge creativity on the part of missionaries. And, you know, it's neat how they've been using this for a while.
Yes. Yeah. 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 I think in the world of missions, this is maybe outside of the scope of our discussion here, but I'll mention it all the same. I think, you know, when there is something that is potentially positive, it also has a potential downside and a dark side to it, or shadow side.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously technology is one of those realities for missions. And so, you know, being connected well to those from your home country is a great thing. And I think for a lot of people, it can be leveraged in very healthy ways, to where it provides just a stronger support system for them in those remote locations. But there's also the reality that people can not integrate as well or as fully or as quickly to their new host country and be a bit more attached to their home country than is profitable for them in that missionary role. And so, you know, hopefully we're at Vallejo leveraging the better side, the more helpful side of that equation. But I think, yeah, video technology and connection also does have some of those, potential challenges for those in ministry locations abroad.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, like, I've got 3 kids in college right now. And when they start to go away and they start becoming adults, you want to sort of cut the apron strings, per se, a little bit. And if there's too much apron strings, you know, we sort of view that as unhealthy. And it sounds like the similar dynamic you're saying here, like when they go to a new country, they need to really assimilate somewhat and connect where they are and start to find belonging there, which is hard, but that's part of the process.
Yes. Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. And I would say by and large, most do that very well. I'm just highlighting the reality. I think for some, it's an easy fallback and a comfort zone. When that struggle, when that transition gets difficult, they kind of lean into the, well, let me just connect with who's familiar and what's comfortable. Or so I think we all kind of have that tendency. And, you know, some are a bit more disciplined, saying, no, actually, I'm going to, you know, make this choice and dive into this new location here. But yeah, but it's just one of those realities that we contend with. So,
yeah. Well, let me sort of turn the conversation here a little bit. Since I've been learning about the work you do and others like you, I'm really feeling called to this myself, but also feeling called to use my position to call others to this. And here at Liberty, we've got a certificate program in our continuing ed department about member care, and we're hoping to develop more programs in the future. But what if somebody's listening right now, you know, either a professor or a grad student, whatever, maybe someone already in the profession, and they go, man, this is so cool. I totally relate to what you're saying. And what if they want to, like, serve in member care counseling, serving global workers in some way? What are some of the practicalities for them to consider? Or if they're wanting to, like, get involved in some way and help in some way, you've been at this for a while. Like, what would they do? Like, what are some suggestions you have of how they might be able to serve or help?
Yeah, that's great. I'll scroll back in history just a little bit and say that the answer to that question has changed over the years. You know, back to our analogy of missions and military having some correlating realities. One of those realities is that historically missionaries have been a bit of a bars and stripes community, you know, akin to the military. So, you know, one of the first questions is, well, how long have you served overseas? Mm-hmm. And if you haven't, then it kind of internally that would translate in, well, you don't get my world. You don't understand. You wouldn't understand, mm-hmm. you know, and I think some of that has quite significantly shifted, which I think is a great thing. But part of my answer to that question is, you've got to know this population. Like, it is a very specific subpopulation that has unique realities that are associated with it. And so even before somebody like jumps into the realm of actually caring for people, I would say just invest in getting to know missionaries, you know, and getting to know their world. And I'm telling you, being a former missionary myself, that is a treat when somebody actually asks you, tell me about your life, tell me about your ministry, you know, has you over for dinner or takes you out to a coffee or whatnot and just says, tell me what life's like being a missionary. I want to know it all. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say that is the key. Now, you know, obviously if you're actually going to get into this realm, you want to be a, you know, a highly trained professional, able to really help people. But in terms of working with this population, the key is knowing their world. Now, you're not going to know their specific area and their people group and their language and that sort of nuance detail, but you can know generally, okay, what are some of the realities that missionaries contend with? So that'd be my first answer, is get to know this population. You know, nobody who works at Vallejo got through our front door because they said, yeah, I wouldn't mind working with missionaries too. They seem like a decent population. Like, you get into this door because you've got a burning passion to know, to serve, and to invest yourself into what this community is all about and how to serve them, specifically them. And so, yeah, that starts by just asking questions. You know, missionaries come to your church, or they are part of your class maybe that you're going through. Like, take them out, you know, spend some time with them, get to know it. And so that would be my by far primary recommendation on that. So at Vallejo, we have, I don't know, I have to tally it up. I would say maybe half of our staff have long-term field experience and the other half doesn't. But I 100% completely trust and uphold every one of our staff member as being authoritative sources of care for this population because they've invested so deeply in getting to know them well. And so, yeah, just like any subpopulation, like, don't go in there pretending like, you know and truly get to know who they are and what their world is like.
Yeah, so. That's a good word. That's great. Well, I'll tell you, I always end these podcasts by asking people like the catch-all question, like, you know, like what would you like to say today that we haven't gotten around to? And so I'm going to come to you for that in just a second here. But I have to say, as I was looking forward to this podcast interview today with you, the Lord kept bringing one scripture to my mind over and over again, and I've been reading it. So I want to share it with the listeners. It's in Exodus chapter 17, and it's a story of when the Amalekites were attacking the Israelites. And I'm going to read the verses because I just feel led of the Lord to do so. But it's Exodus 17, verses 10 through 13, and this is after the Amalekites had attacked Israel. And Moses then told Joshua to go out and fight the Amalekites. And it says, so Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered, and Moses, Aaron, and he and Hur went out to the top of the hill. As long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, I'm assuming when he got tired, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side and one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. And at the end of this, the rest of the chapter, obviously the Israelites won, and they battled the Amalekites, and they had a great victory that day because Aaron and Hur held up the hands of Moses. And I sort of see you as Aaron and Hur for all the Moseses who are out there in the field serving God on the front lines of the battle, the spiritual battle that's going on in the world today. And so I don't know if you receive that, but I totally feel like it's from the Lord. Does that analogy fit of holding up Moses' hands?
That's a hard correlation to to absorb, but yes, I mean, I think that's accurate, that we see ourselves in a very small sliver of involvement in a missionary's life. You know, I mean, they've got family, they've got a supporting organization, they've got team, and they've got a lot of other realms of care and support. But in those times where it's helpful to walk it out with a professional, we come in for a little segment of their life and support them. And so, yeah, absolutely. We find ourselves, now you have a little bit greater insight than most because you know some of our core values. And one of our core values is kingdom focus. Mm-hmm. And we absolutely see ourselves as being part of the missionary venture. And we are partners with the missionaries in what they're doing. Now they're doing it. We're not doing it. You know, they're doing the hard work and labor, but we get to support that. And that is what drives us. I would say my involvement in this realm of people care, I'm only in it because of this population, because of what it translates into. Because if we can support them, then the kingdom is expanded, God's glory is proclaimed, and you know, we just get to worship him and what he's doing around the world in a different way. And so, yeah, so all that to say, yes, absolutely. We see ourselves very much as you know, being there to help them do what they do and lift them up in any way that we can.
Yeah, absolutely. You're definitely right. We're not the only Aarons and hers holding at Moses' hands. They've got a lot of other people in their lives.
Sure. But, absolutely, yeah.
But I'd say before we go, though, I do want to end, like I said, and ask you, you know, what else would you like to share with the listeners today? What else has God put on your heart about member care that maybe I haven't asked you yet today that you'd like to sort of wrap up with?
Yeah, so member care is, I always think of it kind of like the general term healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this big global reality, and then there's different segments within there. But some could be cutting people apart in a surgery room, and some are just, you know, checking your blood pressure in the waiting room. So member care, you know, the clinical arm of it, Valeo, one sliver of that member care pie. But there's so many other areas where people can invest in. I realize we're talking to an audience of people who have that heartbeat to walk with people and to help people. And I would just kind of want to say, don't only relegate your ability to help and support and be a blessing and walking with missionaries only to the clinical side of things. You know, that may come, that may be an appropriate place to invest your skill and energies, but there's such a broader spectrum of involvement that missionaries really, really need. And that's truthfully, that's one of the more difficult areas that we have as clinicians, like finding good, helpful, ongoing support for missionaries. And so, yeah, if your listeners are connected with a church that supports some missionaries or sends out some missionaries, or you've got some former classmates that are now on the mission field, or you have some family members, whatever it is, reach out to them, be a blessing to them, encourage them. And, you know, that's, again, you know, a way to get to know their world. But I would say never discount just the small bits of encouragement and support that you can give to a missionary, because goodness, they need it from many different angles. And so, yeah, that would be, I guess, my parting advice, that it's all well and good to do it professionally and kind of in that one little lane, but there's a much broader realm of the way that you can be involved in this caring for the missionary population. And I would say if there is an opportunity, yeah, jump on it and speak into their life and encourage them. So,
absolutely. Well, this is great. I really appreciate your time today, Eric.
It's been fun.
Absolutely. And thank you, listeners, for joining us as well. I hope that this touches your heart. I hope you hear the heart of God in all of this, because I know, you know, supporting God's workers around the world is certainly part of his heart. And hopefully this will inform you and help you to support this population. So Thanks again, Eric. God bless you. And thanks for listening to the podcast today, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.